I'm originally from Mauritania, which is a sub-Saharan country in western part of Africa. My story started in, or the part of my story that I'm sharing tonight, started in on April 1989. My family and I... get the sign. My family and I lived in the southern part of the country. My dad was the chief of customs for many years. And on April 1989, following a border incident between my country and Senegal, our government started one of the largest ethnic cleansing in West Africa. And my family happened to be one of the victims. One morning, as my dad was getting ready, heading to his office, we saw several hundreds of people with machetes, guns, stones, whatever they could get their hands on, heading to our house. And my dad walked up to them and asked them what was the problem. And what was surprising is that among that mob, we had police officers, law enforcement, any other law enforcement part. And he walked up to them and asked them what was the reason. And he did not get any answer. Actually, not the one he wanted, because he got arrested. They had him sit aside, and they went on and burned the house. So they burned everything, looted everything, and then they took him away. Not only they took him away, but we were left alone. My stepmother was on a trip, and I was left with four of my sisters and two brothers, the youngest one of them 2 years old. We stayed there from 8 in the morning until 5 p.m., staring at the ruins of what my dad had built in 50 years. And nobody had the courage to come and rescue us. Toward the end of the day, that's when a family friend, came to the house and told us that not only they have arrested my father, but they also took him away, 200 miles away. And he asked us to come and stay with his family. So we went and stayed with his family for a week. And during that week, we did not know what happened to our father, whether he was executed or whether he was still alive. Not only there was not telephone services between the two cities, but even if they were, I don't think they would allow him to pick up the phone. So after a week, I decided, as the oldest of the group, to travel to that city and look for his grave. I went to the city and I just started asking, inquiring, as to whether they know what happened to him and the 15 other individuals that was arrested with him. That's when I was told that he was first put on house arrest for a few days, 2-3 days, but then he was transferred to a local prison. I went to that prison to see him and stayed for maybe 30 minutes with him. And I did so each morning. And 2 weeks later, as I was visiting him, the chief of the ward of the prison told me that they will be ending visitations. So I only have two options, either stay with him or go and never come back. So I decided to stay with him. We slept on the same floor, ate the same food, and talked endless stories for a month. And during that month of detention, for no reason, we did not have access to a lawyer, and we did not know what was the reason why he was arrested, and we did not know what would be the fate. After a month, without any news from the family, the part of the family that stayed 200 miles away, one morning the police chief walked up to my father and told him that we will be deported by the end of the day. That's the only time I saw a prospect deportee dancing. We knew at least that we were not going to be executed, so that was the good news. And my dad tried to persuade them that he be deported with the rest of his family, and that request was turned down. We were told that we will be deported, and they might be deported, and we might meet somewhere. we were put on the back of a car and driven to the heading to the border, Senegalese border. And 100 miles into that trip, at our first stop, when we got out of the car, we saw the rest of the family sitting. And that's how we were reunited with them. We were held there for 4 days and then taken to the border on the back of a trailer with 150 additional individuals and put on boats. And when we crossed the river, the Senegalese River, we were basically thrown out there. We went to the local UNHCR, that's the United Nations High Commission for Refugees, and registered as refugees. I saw my dad go from a highly respected person to lining up for food distribution. And when we were deported, he started to organize and advocate for the refugees that were with us. And weeks after the deportation, I decided to go to the local middle school and register. And when I went there, they told me that I could not register because we don't have any documentation. We don't have any school transcript. And I don't have any document that even shows who I am or my age. So I was turned away, and I came back the very next day and literally begged the principal to let me register. He did so. But to complete the registration, I was asked to pay 600 CFA. That's the equivalent of 70 cents. I didn't have it. So my registration was put on hold. And until the deadline passed, that's when the principal decided finally to pay the 70 cents and have me registered. After we registered, we were assigned a refugee camp. We were given the blue plastic tent that you see so often on TV and assigned a part of the city where we can live. I went to school that year and passed. Then I was heading to high school. But the problem is the closest high school is 250 miles away. And I did not know anybody that I would be able to stay with. So one day, as I was visiting a friend, his dad heard that I'm heading to high school, but I don't have any chance to get to that city. He gave me a recommendation letter and his family's address and told me, okay, you can go and stay with my family. And then I had to face the other hurdle, which is how to get to that city. We had monthly food distribution from the UNHCR, and no cash at all. So my younger sister took almost half of the food supply to the local market, sold it, and so I was able to get a fare to take the bus and go to that city. I stayed there for 3 years, graduated high school with honor, and received a full scholarship from the Senegalese government, went to the university, and received another full scholarship from Albert Einstein Foundation called DEFI, and I received my master's degree in 1998, and studied an advanced degree postgraduate in 1999, and enrolled in PhD in 2000. As I was in Dakar, Senegal, I was very involved in advocating for refugees, but also advocating to end slavery in our country, because Mauritania is one of the fewest countries in the world where you can still buy and sell a human being. In 2000, my dad decided to go back to Mauritania to launch a legal battle to get everything he lost back. And that year, I was also heading to a different direction. Because of our political activity, the Senegalese government, and because they kind of get along now with our government, decided that we have to stop any activity that we're doing on Senegalese soil, or be handed over to the Mauritanian government to be executed. And that's when the United States of America stepped in and gave us a chance to come to the United States, but also to try to rebuild our lives. I left Dakar on December 6, 2000, and we had to make a connection in Paris. So the flight from Dakar to Paris went very well. But from Paris to New York, that's where the trouble started. First, I spoke seven languages, but English was not one of them. And I was not lucky to be assigned a seat next to someone who just spoke English. And I tried not to let him know that in addition to sitting for 7 hours, he won't be talking for 7 hours. So I decided to first not let him know that I don't speak English. And to do so, I tried to grab any magazine that was on the airplane and read it, or give him the impression that I was reading it. It definitely did not work, because an hour into the flight, I read almost all the magazines. Then I was back to him again, and he knew it. And that's when he started talking to me. And I would just look at him and look at his facial expression. And whenever he gave me the impression that he was very happy, I laughed with him. And whether he was sad, I just said, "Oh, I'm sad too." You know? So we managed to do that for 7 hours. And when we landed in New York, he shook my hand. "Nice talking to you." I said, We didn't talk. So then we had to make another connection to Dallas in Virginia. And that's where we had to meet the caseworker from the agency that was co-sponsoring us. And he was a Kennedy. His last name is Kennedy, although he's from Namibia. And I don't know how it happened. So when we got there, he went to the airport to pick us up. He was able to find us very easily. But then he came up with the very bad news. He told us that he does not remember where he parked his car. And he wanted me to help him find his car. Not only I did not know any make or American make or models, but it's a huge garage. I mean, and then he told me, and he spoke broken French. He told me that, "Tu m'aides à chercher une blue voiture. You help me find a blue car." I said, "Okay, that's good." Imagine. I'm going up and down this garage, I mean, and looking for any blue car. And when he yelled at me, "Hey, Mama, do I found the car," in French, "j'ai retrouvé la voiture," I walked up to him and looked at the car. The car was not blue. Yeah. Car was green. And I had another friend with me. I looked at him in French. I told him, "Oh, we in trouble. This guy who does not remember his car, the color, or where he parked it, is the one assigned to help us adjust to life." So then a couple of weeks later, he took us, after we got our social security numbers, we went to apply for jobs. And we registered in ESL classes, and that's where I started for the first time the A and B's of the Shakespeare's language. In 2004, the same day that the doctor informed us, my wife and I, that she was pregnant and she would have a boy, that same day I received news that my dad passed away. He lost the battle, and we had to face another problem, because we did not know where to bury him. If we buried him in Mauritania, half of his kids would not be able to see him, and so for hours we were calling each other, trying to figure out where we could bury him and still have all his kids be able to go in and see his grave. Finally, after several consultations, we settled for Senegal. So we buried him not where he was born and grew up and gave 55 years of his life, but we buried him in the country that welcomed him when he was a refugee. And in 2007, I finally, at last, became a citizen of the country. It was one of these defining moments in my life, because after over 30 years of being stateless, I finally had a country. I was very humbled and very grateful to be part of this great nation. But also I was very sad that the person that brought me to live this life, my father, died stateless, died without any citizenship. Thank you.